what I've been seeing is just so many teachers scrambling.
Yeah.
And we're not, you know, it's a bunch of teachers and leaders who are not prepared to teach in this arena.
Hi, that was Sarah Vanderwerf speaking about some of the challenges we are facing in this time of upheaval in teaching and learning as the world comes to grip with the changes caused by the current coronavirus outbreak. As we record this episode, thousands of schools around the world are closed, and teachers and school leaders are scrambling to create the means to teach students of all ages in remote settings. In this episode of IB Matters, we talk to Sarah Vanderwerf, a national leader in math education and a former IB teacher, about how to use modeling to prepare students for learning from videos, a common platform being used by teachers when creating e-learning opportunities. Her suggestions were posted in her popular math teaching blog, and we reached out to her to make them available in the podcast. Sarah has shared an extensive list of links to great resources, and I encourage you to check those out in our podcast notes. Welcome to IB Matters, a podcast for those who currently teach, lead, attend, or are interested in International Baccalaureate IB schools. Hi, folks. Welcome back to IB Matters. We are currently in the time of the coronavirus. So if you're listening to this later, this is information that I was hoping to share with folks that they might be able to use during this kind of interesting and difficult time. And I read a blog post here today, and it was from a friend of mine, a former student of mine. We won't say how long ago, right, Sarah?
It was a long time ago.
It was a while ago. But Sarah Vanderwerf's my guest today, and she is an experienced math teacher and is very active in the math world. Mathematics, she's well-respected and well-known around for her work in mathematics. And I'm going to let her continue the introduction of herself and her work. But I'm really looking forward to hearing this. This blog post talks about modeling e-learning, distance learning in the era of COVID-19. So hello, Sarah. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. I keep wanting to call you Mr. Peterson. You just do not outgrow that, but I'll try and call you John. Sarah Vanderwerf, and I write about mathematics at sarahvanderwerf.com. And I taught in Minneapolis Public Schools here in Minnesota for almost 30 years. And I taught a combination of middle school and high school. I did teach in IB schools during that time, and have had both MYP training when I was working in middle schools, and also attended some HL training for math studies when I was teaching high school. And I currently, in 2 years, I took a leave of absence from my district 2 years ago, and I currently do trainings with teachers all around the United States. I give keynotes at conferences, and I'm pretty involved in the national, in the United States math community. And so a little over four years ago, I started a math blog, and I got well known from some of the things that I had written about and some of the things there. And so I'm really passionate about engaging all students, not just some students, in the learning of mathematics. And I believe that we all can do that. And so, I currently... I'm not teaching students, and just to be upfront in this podcast, I have never taught students virtually before. But what I have done in the last 2 years is I've started doing a lot of virtual training of teachers. And when I first did my first one, it was choppy and uncomfortable for me. I prefer to be in person. I still prefer to be in person. But because I've done so many at this point, I don't know, maybe 50 times, and you know, anywhere from 15 minutes to 3 hours is kind of the length that I have done. I've gotten better at those things as I've gone along. And then I also, just so you know, up front, I a year ago spoke about best practices in mathematics in a flipped classroom setting with a friend of mine from St. Cloud, Minnesota, named Elise. And during that time, I did a ton of research and have taught side by side with people who have taught in that environment. And so have really thought a lot about that. So with all this going on in the world, I thought I would write about it. And I just put out a blog post a couple days ago that we're going to talk about in this podcast. So the math community, one last thing in introduction, is on Twitter. We're in lots of different social media areas, but probably the biggest one is Twitter. And we call ourselves the MTBOS, M-T-B-O-S. And I'll link to that thread and give that to John as we're doing. But you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Those will be linked in the notes for this podcast.
Sounds great. And I I'll have them in the notes, as you just said, in the podcast. So, you know, as I was telling you before we started recording, this this time is interesting, as all of us are kind of sitting at home getting ready and preparing for students or to teach online. Here in Minnesota, the governor has shut the schools down for 8 days, not to teach the kids, but to prepare for teaching the kids. So we're not actually even allowed right now to start online classes and to do work with kids directly. But we're supposed to be spending this time preparing to do so, which I think is wise. But, you know, this is one of the reasons I wanted to share this with folks listening. And of course, people will be listening. The vast majority of our listeners are not in Minnesota, but I think these things that I read in your blog post were, you know, obviously applicable to folks anywhere. And it had a unique take to me anyway, as I hadn't seen this particular approach to preparing the students to learn in this environment, at least when they're looking at videos. So maybe you could talk a little bit, Sarah, about you know, why did you feel the need to put this out? And I think the first point that you make is, you know, making before they even start, you have an interesting thought in the blog post about, you know, before you even start trying to teach academics, you have kind of a different thought about that.
Yeah, I do. Well, first of all, I just want to encourage all, if you're a parent or a teacher or anybody listening to this, if you need the time to pause in your life and just do something amazing and fun to reconnect with people, even though we're doing it virtually, I would encourage you to do that. But once you get ready to think about learning in this new environment that we're jumping into, most of us are having to jump into it really quickly. I think a lot of the practices that work in the classroom can also have play out in this e-learning environment. And so one of the things I hear a lot from teachers, because I work with teachers now all the time, and teachers will say, well, these kids can't because blank. And they'll fill that in all the time. And I've been hearing a lot of people online expressing concerns about what is, you know, like, are students actually going to learn in this environment? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's gone through my head as I've been listening to this, because this happens even in the classroom, it goes to my core beliefs. And that is that I believe students can do anything. And when students aren't doing something, it's usually because they don't know how to do that thing. And right. So I feel like it's really important for us as their teachers to help them know how to do work in that environment. So that what I'm talking about does have a name. And it gets at some of my core beliefs about being a teacher, that teaching the social part of teaching is just as important as teaching the academic side. Mm-hmm. So often as math teachers, but this could go for science teachers, language arts teachers, any type of teacher. We are really into, especially at the secondary level, like, I am a math teacher. I am going to teach math, and I'm going to teach them how to factor binomials, and I'm going to do all this. And we're so thinking about the mathematics that we need to teach, but really 50% of our job is teaching how to learn in the environments that our students are at. And right. So the language that I'm going to use here comes from a training that I took a long time ago. It's from Responsive Classroom, and I'll link to where I first heard about this language. And one of the things that their trainings that they advocate for that I realized I had been doing early in my career, but it didn't have a name, is that we need to be modeling for our students how we want them to be in the environments in our classrooms. And so one of the things I'm advocating for right now in this new e-learning environment is we need to help model for our students what it's like to learn in this environment before we even get to the math. Mm-hmm. And I'm advocating that you do that with something fun, something not related to your core content, and getting into doing something in that area.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And you have quite a few examples of that in your blog post. Let me just I'm not sure if this fits in here or not, but you talked about, you know, in your post, it talks about, you and I had coffee a couple months ago, actually now it is, and we were talking about this, and I've seen it in a lot of your writing, about you want students to see something before you show it. In other words, give them a chance to experience something, and you want them to say it before you tell them. Is that kind of where this modeling comes about, if they have a chance to experience it directly?
Yeah, I think that's why what Responsive Classroom calls modeling, why it resonated with me, because my core belief in how I plan math lessons for a lot of my career has been that my goal is that students will see the mathematics before I show it to them, and that they will say it before I tell them, because I want students to be the owners of their learning and not be mimicking what they're seeing me do. So much of how we've taught math has been we tell students, here's how you do it, and then we ask them to mimic it, but they don't own it, and then they go on to forget it, and they don't see them a part of it. And when we make students the creators of their learning, they can do that. And so what modeling in a sense is that, you know, like I'm asking you to model the new or e-learning community, is that you're going to do something so that students are going to tell you what it's like to be in that environment before you even have given them the words. Because I think the worst thing we could do right now in the e-learning is like, hey, students, we're going to be learning this way. Here's how you do it. And then have them take, you know, online notes on this, or have them read about it, or worse yet, never even talk about it at all. And so how do we help students like say those words? I have the blog posts that I'm the most well-known for is how you help students work in groups. And it's something called the 100 number task. And it's a task that, you know, at the secondary level, you can do in 20 minutes with your students. And at the end of this task, I haven't told these words to any of my students, but when I ask my students, what does good group work look like? All my students say things like, well, we were all focused. We didn't get distracted. All our group members, their heads were in, everybody was communicating, we were talking to each other, we were supporting each other, and they're saying all these things. And so when I started researching a little over a year ago, the online environment, and thinking about that with my practice, I was thinking about how could I help my students model what this would look like so that they're going to talk about what I want them doing when they're watching videos or participating in other aspects of this new environment for them and for us.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, just to reiterate that, or to repeat that, if I make sure I understand it. So your 100 number task, which is in the blog, is a sneaky way for them, you know, rather than to say, here's what I expect from good group work, you do these things. You're doing a task that's fun and engaging.
Yes.
And then afterwards you go, so why did that work? What were you guys doing? And it goes back to what you said, the kids actually figure it out before you tell them how to do it.
Yep. And it's giving them an exemplar that we can keep coming back to and say, students, remember when we did the 100 number project? What did you have to do there? And it's an emotional connection where students will be like, oh, we had to do this. And then they can jump in that particular task. I advocated for taking photos of your students while you were doing this thing. And in my classroom, it would look like me just pointing at the photos, which are up on my wall all year long, and saying, hey, we're going to do group work. Turn to your neighbor and say three things that we need to do. And it just vastly improved the group work in my class. And so what I'm saying in this new e-learning environment is I think there's another task that we could do with our students to help them in the same way, so that as they're jumping in to learn, that we're helping them name the things that they need to do as students in this new environment, and that we can keep coming back to this particular thing to reference people doing that.
Yeah. So then it basically took that idea and moved it to knowing that a lot of this online work that we'll be asking students to do is, and there's a lot of modalities that'll take place, but the particular one that we're talking about here is, you know, if you've got kids watching videos, in many cases they're asked to go look at different kinds of videos. Maybe you're giving them a sample of videos to look at, but how is it that you're asking them to model watching videos? What's the modeling going on there?
Yeah, so this is the thing that I learned from my friend Elise, who has been teaching in a flipped classroom for a long time. Something that she and others do at the beginning of the year to help their students learn from videos, because often, particularly, my area of expertise is mathematics. Students will turn on, for example, from Khan Academy, a Khan Academy video on math, and they'll watch it and they'll get nothing out of it. And so I would love for teachers to consider having modeling. How do you watch a video and learn something from it? And so here's what I would be doing in this new e-learning environment. My first assignment to my students as we were gathering together would be, hey, students, we're all going to learn something together. And that something would not be mathematics yet. I like to give students choice whenever possible. And so on my blog, I've collected a bunch of different video links that you could connect to of different things students can learn. And the videos are range in length from 3 minutes to 15 minutes. And they're things like how to juggle, how to do a card trick, how to do the renegade dance from TikTok, how to do a variety of different things. I think I have, I put together a student task sheet, and I think there's probably 8 to 10 things. And I also offered up that they could choose something on their own. But what students are going to do, or you're going to ask your students to do, is you're going to ask them to select one of those videos of something they don't know how to do yet. And then you're going to ask them over the next day to try and learn that thing. I'm going to advocate that you don't give them too many directions. Like, I don't think I would even say to my students that I'm asking them to do this because I want them to learn how to learn in this environment. I would literally just say, hey, we're going to start this math task and we're going to learn something from a video. And I'd love for you to select one of these. And so after them having a chance, and I recommend, give them a day or two or three, and I would not expect my students to get, they don't have to get perfect at this thing. I just want them to get as good as they can in that given time at this new task. So let's say they're learning how to fold an origami crane, a piece crane. And so I would then, the next time that we meet virtually as a class, I would ask, us all to do some show and tell and show our new skills that we've learned, even if we don't know how to do it perfectly, that we're doing some show and tell. That also could happen. It doesn't have to be, because I know all of our e-learning environments are going to be different and we're not all going to be meeting at the same time with our students. So I think there's some other things you can do, but ultimately you want them to try out this new thing. And after they've shown their new thing, the question, this is where the modeling comes into play. We've learned, you've asked your students to learn something new. You've had them watch a video to learn how to do it. And then this is the question you're going to ask of your students. And I would have students even virtually do and submit somehow a quick write on this question. What did you do during this learning while you're watching the video that helped you learn this new task? So when you were watching the videos, what are the things that you did as you were doing that to get to learn, this new skill? And so give them some time to think about how the video helped them learn a new skill. And then start collecting some of the things that they say as they're doing. And, if it was me and I was meeting at the same time with students, I would be on, however you're recording information, I would be typing things in or writing it down. And I have examples of things students would say, potentially in the classroom, of how they learn from videos. So maybe your students might say, well, I watched the video a lot of times. I had to stop it and I had to pause it and I had to watch it again. This one part I didn't know how to do. They might say, you know what? I was doing this new thing. I was doing it the same time as the person on the video. Man, there was something in the video I didn't understand. So I Googled and I looked at another video on the same topic. And when that person did it, I figured out that's how I could do it. But ultimately you're asking them to name just all the things that they can think of. I think the important question you want to ask during this time is, what else did you learn? What else, what else, what else, what else, what else? Mm-hmm. And get out all the different things, that they might have done from there. Not all of this is in my blog, but I would, say to my students, all these things, which one do you think is the most important to do, and get them to name those things. When I do that with my students, ultimately I'm getting them to talk about how they felt while they were doing this. Some of the things they did, what did you see, or notice about yourself as you were doing this. And I'm going to collect all the things that all my students say. and I'm going to type up for them kind of a summary based on their words, not my words,
sure,
of how to do that.
Yeah. So what's interesting is it's a very authentic list. The examples in the blog post that you just recall, you just mentioned a few of them. You know, the stopping and starting it, the watching it over, putting on the subtitles. Those are things that, you know, all of us can probably relate to. That's what we do when we want to do this. But it's authentic because instead, just like you said earlier, you're not just giving them a list. Here's what you need to do. You know,
yeah.
You're literally letting them create it. And I suppose, you know, if you had different sections and you were running this or asymmetrically or yeah, you know, different times with different groups of kids, you may end up with somewhat different lists, but at least correct, they would have ownership of the list.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. And I, ultimately, when it comes from their words and from that emotional connection they had to learning something, I think it can be, I know it's more powerful than if I had just given them a list. I think if I had given them this list as Sarah Vanderwerf, their teacher, Miss Van is their teacher, I think they would, you know, they compliantly like listen to it and they'd probably nod their head, but the idea of them actually applying that, I think would be lower than when they had that experience. I've had some people tweet me since I wrote this blog post and they've said, "Oh, this turned on the light bulb. You're so right, Sarah, because all my students are doing these days is watching and rewatching TikTok videos to learn the new dances on TikTok." Yeah. And, yep, you know, like this is just us connecting that experience of what they're doing well and transferring that to this new learning environment where they're learning math or science or social studies and doing some things. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah. You had some good advice for any teacher choosing to do this. Go ahead and tell folks what is it that every teacher should do before they do something like this?
Yeah, I am a huge believer in this. I'm a big believer. So for example, when I give homework as a teacher, one of the rules I have for myself is I never give a homework that I don't do for myself first. And it's really changed the quality of the homework that I've given. And it's actually improved the quality of me getting homework back from students. And so my tip for you is if you're going to do this is I want to encourage you as a teacher to first take an hour and learn to do something new. It can be anything. Anything that you want to learn, and just pick something small in a video that's 3 to 15 minutes. Yeah. And you can use one of the videos at my blog post. I have a bunch of links there. Choose something there to learn. But if you're not going to be a great teacher of how to learn in this environment and how to even collect your student ideas until you too have an emotional connection to this. Yeah. So I really want to encourage you to jump in and do this yourself. Well,
I like the card trick one myself because you have something to share with people in the future. So, I love that one. I have a granddaughter that loves card tricks. And so we've actually done that together. We've looked them up. Said, let's learn a new one together. And we do all the same things you talked about.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So to talk me through a little bit of what happens, like when you then go to the first math thing, or if you're doing this with adults or with students, how do you then take that list that you've compiled and actually make it come to life when they're doing what might be more traditional math assignment?
Yeah. So the thing that I've done in my classroom when I'm doing the 100 number project is the first time we do group work after we've modeled what group work should look like, I will cover up the list that we created and I will say to them, I want you to think of 5 things that we talked about yesterday without looking and turn to your neighbor and say to your neighbor the 5 things that we need to do while we're in this environment. And so I would do some type of version of that online. I would, you know, like it might even be as crazy as saying, like, let's say you're not meeting at the same time. My notes to my students would be, I want you to remind yourself of what it took to learn from videos before you watch the videos that I've assigned to you today. So I want you to run and go find someone in your house, your parents, or call your grandparents or somebody and tell them, say, my math teacher is making me tell you 5 things I have to do whenever I watch a video in order to learn from it. Just getting them to say it out loud. And I know that sounds silly. And I know not all of your students are going to call their grandparents and tell them what it, you know, they have to do, but some will. And so we want to function in that area. I might even say something crazy to my students, like, I want everybody right now to go to your front door, open your front door and yell out into the world, I learn best from videos when I, and then fill in the blank and give them a silly thing. And then for the next few times where I assign videos, I'm going to do some kind of small thing. And it might be, let's say I have a template where they're typing things in. it just might be me saying, you know, type in your response to this question before you watch this video. What are for you the two most important things that you need to do in order for you to learn from videos? So personalizing it to them. I'm not going to do that with every video forever. Sure. But with all things, let's say that our online environment extends itself for a month or two or three, as we move forward, you know, these things that we've modeled, we need to come back to when students aren't doing them. We need to come back and just do a quick remodel or reminding them of what that kind of would look like, you know, like what it felt like to learn from videos. Remember when you learned that card trick? What did you have to do? And get them to say those things. Right. I think all it takes with our students is for us to say, hey, remember when such and such a student, and I would name the student, remember when Hussein, remember when he learned how to do the renegade dance? What did he have to do in order to learn that? Like when we personalize it, we don't even have to say much after that. That whole emotion in their brain where they've stored that information comes back to them really quickly. Hmm.
That's great. So you mentioned at the top that you had some resources you'll be sharing with us. Were there some places that you like, and whether it's math teachers or other subject areas or other grade levels, early years or later years, secondary, that you recommend that teachers go? You mentioned math. I know a lot of people are, Khan Academy is getting a lot of attention now because it's kind of already in place. Are there some other places you're recommending people to look for these things?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of looking for videos, John,
videos, or even you know, just to get off that specific topic, you know, everyone's looking for content to help them.
Yeah, I think everybody's looking for content. I mean, I have been posting on my Facebook page tons of resources for a lot of for elementary going into middle school.
Yeah,
and I have two resources that I'd love people to consider as we enter this environment, because one of my fears is that as we enter the e-learning environment, that we go back and all these good things we've been doing in our classroom, we take, you know, five steps back and go back to teaching that isn't as effective with our students. And so one of the things that looks like in mathematics is that we go back to finding videos and other things that really teach quick tricks to our students, but don't really teach things conceptually. So I think a lot of parents and even some teachers, they're not always sure what are the thing, you know, the videos that I should be linking to or the things I should be doing. And so I will link to a book that I recommend for all math teachers called Nix the Tricks, which are, I don't know, 60 to 90 tricks that we shouldn't be teaching in math and what to do instead. And so it just gives you a lens in terms of what the quality is. I've also been getting a lot of questions about a good support for students at home right now, because, you know, like the teachers aren't going to be able to fill everything in. And there's so many amazing companies out there that are offering things for free right now, at least for the next 90 days.
Right. I've gotten a whole long list of things for diploma students.
Yeah. And from mathematics, if you have a student that's struggling in mathematics, one of my favorite, I have two favorite support places that are both offering things for free. One is called Dreambox and one is called ST Math. They normally cost money, but right now for the next 90 days, you can be using those things for free to support your students in the online environment. And so I would recommend that. And then from a math point of view, the last thing that I'll name, but there's lots of things out there. But join us, you know, like I'll put link to the MITBOSS online community, because if you don't know what to do, all you got to do is tag me in a tweet and I can retweet it. I have, you know, I don't know, probably 11,000 people following me, and I will retweet it and we'll get you an answer from the math community on things, because everybody's talking about right now. But my last tip would be pay attention to Desmos, D-E-S-M-O-S. Mm-hmm. It's the online computer, but it's so much more. The best learning out there, if you're a teacher in math, trying to build a really good experience for your students, I highly recommend the teacher Desmos sites. Activity Builder is what it's sometimes called. There's so many things you can use there for free. It's all free, but there's so many things that are put together. There's even that platform is something that could be used in other content areas. So if you know somebody that knows something about Desmos, I highly recommend that right now.
Okay, good. That's good. Yeah, thanks for those ideas. I think, and I'm glad you mentioned thinking conceptually. I didn't catch the name of that book. You said something on tricks or?
Yeah, it's Tina Cardone is the author's name, and it's a free download book, and it's called Nix, N-I-X, The Tricks.
Nix the tricks. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a quick read. It's like a page of a trick that we don't want you teaching in mathematics. Right. And it tells you why. And then it tells you what to do instead. So,
you know, and I was, as you know, personally, I was a chemistry teacher. And one of the things I'd really despised about some of the practices in teaching chemistry was that folks would just plug and grind. They would just have you, you know, stick numbers in a hole, and then you'd crank out the answer as if the algorithm was the understanding.
Correct.
And it's exactly the opposite. And as you know, as a math teacher, you know, knowing the concept behind why that works is way more important and long lasting and best practice. And so maybe we didn't know that back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever, but we sure know it now. We know it better.
And I think
we shouldn't be teaching the old way.
Yeah, and it really plays into the best practices of the IB community as well. When you look at what they're asking us to do to build our units and all those things, it's just best practices. So I would really challenge us to just think about how we can, as much as possible, have students create meaning for themselves during this time. I know it's not easy, and I think the bright light during this time is going to be that we figure a lot of these things out, because I do think students learning both online, but also in our classrooms, will be that combination of those two things will be part of what we're doing in the future in our classrooms. And so I'm just trying to stay hopeful in this time to say, hey, how can we exercise these new muscles as teachers to get better at something that we're not good at yet? So I'm trying to take my own growth mindset into that new environment as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what I said kind of on the top too, even though we are in the current time of the coronavirus, what we're talking about today and what I think this might be the catalyst for change, schools are kind of in this mode where we know that the old paradigm of how we run a school is probably not the best for the students learning today. And this might be one of those catalysts that really kind of, you know, gets the ball rolling for change. But then as we practice, there's going to be some very poor practice and some very excellent practice that is carried out. And hopefully we'll learn from this experience to carry forward into, you know, a better way of teaching and learning. Thank you again, Sarah. Is there anything else that you want to share?
No, I guess I'll say this. As teachers, don't assume that your students know how to do things. That's always what I start with when I'm planning a lesson, is just don't assume they know how to do it. And then think about, how can I help them understand how to work in these environments? And so video that I've talked about today is just one small thing.
Right.
I'll be writing about some other things over the next several weeks, on my blog as well. So
yeah,
my name's Sarah.
Can follow you.
Yeah. Yep. Sarah Vanderwerf. Come hang out with me in Math World. If you need to get connected in that arena, I can get you connected to anybody.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for your time today, Sarah. Like you said, the video is just one of the things that we're doing in distance learning. There are other aspects of that. And each one, like you said, don't assume they know how to do it. Spend some time modeling. And I think this is a good transfer concept. In other words, what you are just talking about today about learning videos or learning how to learn from videos is something we can model for how to learn from other platforms as well.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thanks, Sarah. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson, Mr. John.
You can learn much more about Sarah's work and see the blog post that inspired this episode using links in our podcast notes. You'll also find links to several of the references she made there as well. We have also posted the link to our podcast website in those notes. Please find all of our episodes wherever you get your podcasts and click subscribe so you don't miss any future programs. Follow us on Twitter at MattersIB. Also help us spread the word about IB by liking and sharing the IB Matters links in your own feeds and social networks. In very little time, we have already been heard in over 90 countries, a testament to the global reach of the IB.